members of ABAG's administrative committee are hereby excused, and we're going to move on very shortly to, you don't have to stick around for operations committee, and we're going to get underway shortly once. We are going to do the operations committee. I'm just allowing a minute or two for people to disperse and for David Campos to return to the bosom of the commission. Welcome back, David. Your compensation didn't increase, by the way, when you were sitting over there.
I'm figuring out.
Good morning, everybody. It is Friday, May the 10th, and could I ask if we have a quorum of the Operations Committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we have a quorum.
Okay, we do. That's excellent. Agenda item number two, and by the way, I would like to welcome the new Vice Chair of the Operations Committee, experienced battler from Marin County, Steve Kinsey, and I'm looking forward to working with Steve in this committee. And he's already been introduced to the weird ways we do business in this committee at 9 o'clock this morning. Anyway, we have a consent calendar. And we have a second, and so it's on the floor. Anybody have any items they wish to discuss? Any members of the public have anything they wish to discuss? I've got no cards in this matter. And so I'll call the question. All those in favor of adopting the consent calendar, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, that is adopted. Thank you. What? I didn't. Are you opposed? No, good. Well, it would pass anyway by acclamation. Okay, we now come to agenda item number three. We have two items on the Regional Transportation Management System. One is an item on a policy matter to forward to the full commission, and the second one is an informational item, and I would ask that we have a staff report on the proposed MTC Traffic Operations System policy update. This would be MTC resolution number 4104, and Ashley Nguyen is going to give us the report. Welcome, Ashley.
All right, good. Great, thanks. Good morning, Commissioners. Ashley Nguyen with MTC's Operations Section. I'm here to present staff's proposal to update the 2004 Traffic Operations Systems Policy. The purpose of this policy is really to kind of establish a much more action-oriented approach to activating ramp metering and other TOS elements, and to really encourage compliance by conditioning funds on meeting the requirements of the policy. Just by way of background, in early 2004, the Commission adopted the first TOS policy that required the inclusion of TOS elements such as ramp meters, cameras, and traffic detection systems during the construction of new major freeway projects. This policy sought to build a TOS system to more effectively manage congestion on our freeway system. This policy was included as part of the Transportation 2030 plan and has been included by reference in all subsequent regional transportation plans as well as our fund programming documents. The 2004 TOS policy has enabled MTC and Caltrans, along with our partner agencies, the congestion management agencies, and local agencies, to make significant progress in implementing TOS, as exemplified by the three ramp metering success stories that you see on this slide, which includes San Mateo US 101, which was activated, the ramp meters were activated in 2000, Alameda I-580 with the meters activated in 2008, and most recently the Santa Clara I-280 project, which was activated in 2012. With the introduction of the Freeway Performance Initiative in 2007 as part of the Transportation 2035 plan, we were able to expand our reach in terms of getting our TOS policy implemented. The Freeway Performance Initiative, as you may know, includes a number of different elements to really look at ways to mitigate, address and mitigate congestion, both recurring congestion caused by bottlenecks as well as non-recurring congestion caused by incidents. So we have a number of different strategies. We have TOS, we have ramp metering, we have arterial management, incident management, 511 traveler information, as well as ongoing performance monitoring, really to look at the way our system functions and how we can better address the growing congestion due to growth in traffic demand. As you know, the cornerstone of the Freeway Performance Initiative is ramp metering. The reason this strategy is our focus is that we know it works. Ramp metering is a very low-tech, relatively low-tech, but cost-effective strategy that really has been proven to be an effective means to manage traffic on our freeway system. The metering does indeed help to smooth out the traffic that's on the freeway as well as traffic that's merging and entering the freeway system. We've seen through a number of our studies that we've done to date on all the ramp metering corridors that have been in effect that ramp metering does have a large safety impact. We have seen that the smoothing of traffic, again, entering the freeway system significantly is reduced because of the metering. In this slide here, what we're showing is the reduction in accidents on eastbound I-580. And what we see here as part of the first phase of the ramp metering project, we saw a 21% reduction in accidents. And then when we implemented the second phase, we saw an additional 25% decrease in accidents. We're also seeing that there are mobility effects of ramp metering, positive ones, with ramp metering does indeed help provide some modest improvements in terms of freeway throughput. We're seeing about up to a 5% result in mobility as part of ramp metering, but what's more important is that ramp metering actually produces decreases in travel time. So here are a number of different ramp corridors with ramp metering, and we're seeing a decrease for anywhere between 1 minute decrease to a 19-minute decrease in travel time. For the San Mateo 101 project, the first one on your list, again, it has a 19-minute reduction, which really equates to about almost a 60% reduction in travel time, which is fairly significant. This map here shows the status of all the ramp metering work that has been done to date. The thing to look at is all the green lines. The green lines indicate corridors where ramp metering has been activated. And we, you can see that there is quite a bit of saturation in Alameda County, Santa Clara County, as well as San Mateo County. The yellow lines are the next set of corridors that are right now under construction. Yellow indicates ramp metering equipment is under construction, and these corridors are filling in the gaps, if you will, and we're looking towards those projects in terms of future ramp meters. The blue lines is really the focus here of this map. It's these are corridors where ramp metering has been installed, equipment is in place, but it has not, the ramp meters have not yet been activated. So we do have some work ahead of us. The good news here is that we are making progress on each of those corridors. For example, in Contra Costa along State Route 4 as well as State Route 242, MTC is currently repairing some of the damaged ramp metering equipment, and we're working with the Contra Costa Transportation Authority and the local agencies to activate ramp metering. And we expect that activation to occur early this summer. We're also making progress along Solano's I-80 corridor. We've been working really closely with the Solano Transportation Authority and the local agencies, and we're looking to advance the first usable segment between Red Top and North Texas by later this fall. And we'll continue to work with them on the rest of the corridor in terms of looking at their metering plans. For the Sonoma US 101 corridor, MTC, Caltrans, and the Sonoma County Transportation Authority just last month launched a ramp metering plan process, and we have a goal in mind of going through the planning process and activating the ramp meters by early 2014. For the Marin US 101 corridor, we've been working with the Transportation Authority of Marin and its local agencies, and we are currently looking at ways to potentially phase this corridor so that we can get some tangible, usable segment in place within the next few years. So the TOS policy, I have to say, by large, has been quite effective in terms of really pushing the TOS implementation, but we do have some limitations, and this slide outlines three big areas of limitations. The first is that the 2004 policy really is looking at really focused more on installation than activation. The policy was really focused on trying to find ways to include ramp metering and other TOS elements as part of major construction projects, and so that's been really the thrust of the policy thus far. And so the activation, while it was part of the policy, wasn't the biggest point of the policy, so we're looking to change that. Second is that the policy does rely on a fairly repetitive consensus building process. We know that going into the process, we really do want to build consensus and to work with the CMAs and the local agencies to really think about the TOS elements and what it means for improving the functioning of a particular corridor. And we certainly go through a process where we try to build consensus and a better understanding of all the mitigation strategies that could be in play. But what happens with the ramp metering aspects of the project is that we go in this kind of in loop where we go through a process with the local agencies through a technical committee to really review all the technical documents and really have an understanding of ramp metering. But at the same time, there is a practice that Caltrans has where Caltrans looks for a unanimous agreement among the local jurisdictions about ramp metering, and they memorialize that agreement through an MOU. And this is where that hang-up is. The MOU process can somewhat draw out the planning process, particularly if there is disagreement amongst the local agencies about the plans. And so this MOU process does take a little bit of time to work through. And in this respect, it does kind of hinder our purpose in terms of getting the ramp metering activated. The third point here is that the policy does involve a fairly drawn-out, long planning process, if you will. I certainly am a planner by trade, and I, you know, love planning and all the good stuff that comes with planning, but sometimes planning takes too long, and that's the case here, where we have a very linear, multi-step planning process that really draws out the time that needs to get to activation, and we're looking to streamline that planning process. Just to make the point a little bit finer, our past and current process does take quite a bit of time to go through. For any one corridor, we go through a feasibility study first to really understand how a corridor functions, and then we go through, in the second year, go through design and construction, and then in the third year, we go through this protracted MOU process, and then the fourth year, we have this goal of activating the meters once we finish a metering plan. It's a pretty long process, and we think we can certainly accelerate and streamline the process so that we really get to activation much sooner, really to deal with the congestion that we have at hand today. So the new practice moving forward with the adoption of this TOS policy is that we would move forward with design and construction for any particular corridor, and during the construction phase, and not waiting until after construction, during the construction phase, we would actually start a metering plan process that really, again, continues to work with the local jurisdictions and the CMAs to build consensus and understanding of the technical issues associated with ramp metering and TOS, and then really go into the process of understanding the ramp meters, how they might work, and what the timing may be. And we would do that in the second year so that our aim would be to activate as soon as we have all the equipment in the ground, we have a ramp metering plan in place, we have a good consensus among the local agencies and the CMAs, and we can turn on the equipment. This new practice hopefully will shave off about up to 2 years of time. And that's really the goal here. We have congestion on our freeways. We have a strategy that works, and we know that works, and we're looking to streamline the planning process to get that in place sooner than later. So with regards to the updates to the 2004 policy, we are looking for a new approach. And the first new element to this TOS policy is that we would be emphasizing both TOS installation and activation. We need to be a little bit more explicit that the goal of this policy, the outcome of this policy, really is about activating our TOS system. And we would look to activating the ramp metering upon the completion of a ramp metering plan. So we don't wait until this long drawn-out process where we do first a feasibility study, wait for a couple of years, then do a ramp metering study. We'll do that all in one shot, and our aim is to move forward to activation. We will continue, again, to work with the CMAs and the local agencies. This has been a really good model for consensus building, and so we certainly want to build and continue that effort. But what we would like to do is to really not go into this protracted MOU process. So we really are thinking about encouraging Caltrans to discontinue going to MOUs with local agencies. But what's really most important, I think, from certainly from the local agency's point of view, is really to understand how the ramp meters will be operated. And so what you have here in terms of a new addition to the TOS policy is the inclusion of ramp metering operating principles. And here we're looking to really address two key concerns that we hear from local agencies for every quarter that we've done today. And those two concerns are, one is that there's spillback of traffic onto city streets, and two, there's potential diversion of traffic onto local streets so that, you know, for those commuters that want to bisect all the ramp meters to get to the one ramp that's not metered. And so we think that these ramp metering operating principles will really address those two issues. We will be looking to employ these ramp metering operating principles through the ramp metering planning process, so that when we actually do all the technical analysis, we have an eye to making sure that there's no spillback onto local streets and that there is no diversion. And so the ramp metering operating principles are shown in the slide. And the third, and this is really where we think we need to add a little bit of oomph to the policy, and that oomph is really about conditioning of MTC discretionary funds. We have, in the past, really good experience, but we're at a point in time where ramp metering is about 20 years old, and we kind of want to get our skin more into the game. We've got to move a little bit faster. So we think that there's an opportunity for us to really work, again, with the jurisdictions, but should there be issues that really delay activation, we're looking at potentially conditioning MTC discretionary funds to do that. So if a jurisdiction fails to install and activate ramp meterings after the completion of a ramp metering implementation plan, it's at the Commission's discretion to consider suspending fund programming actions using our federal and state discretionary funds for that jurisdiction. And again, this is the reason we have this in here is to really add that teeth to make sure that everyone is really on notice that we're serious about implementing a complete system of TOS in our region, because we've got to find a way to manage our congestion. So this requirement is included in the policy for that purpose. With that concludes my presentation. Staff recommends that this committee approve and refer MTC Resolution 4104 to the Commission for final action.
Thank you very much for that staff report, Ashley. I think it lays out the policy changes. It was boldly stated, and thank you for that. Before I entertain a motion on the recommendation, and I would note that the attachment A to the resolution does have the proposed draft policy, I'd ask if there are any questions from, and I'm just going to start on the far side there with Commissioner Campos.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you very much, Ms. Nguyen, for Nguyen for the presentation. I just wanted to follow up on the comments that were presented by the San Francisco County Transportation Authority, and there are actually comments that are shared as well by the San Francisco Metropolitan Transportation Agency, the MTA. And I'm sure that you've seen the email, and I'm just wondering if you have any comments, responses to that, through the chair.
Okay, through the chair.
Do it again, Campos.
So through the chair, if you can ask staff to respond to the comments from San Francisco County Transportation Authority.
Yeah, the memo that's been distributed to all of us.
We did receive an email from the San Francisco County Transportation Authority, and they have a few issues that I can highlight today, which is the TA does not support any blanket requirements to implement ramp metering, and we think the policy does indeed address this. The policy calls for MTC, Caltrans to work with the CMAs to look at any major freeway projects and determine whether or not TOS is applicable. And so we think the process is in place to address that. Ramp metering is a good strategy. It's correct. It's not a strategy for every corridor. But there could be other TOS strategies that are applicable, and we might want to pursue those. And so the policy does include that provision. The second point here is that the TA does not feels that there should be a more multimodal corridor focus when we do feasibility studies. And I agree, but I don't think that's the intent of the TOS policy. The TOS policy feasibility study was to really look at the feasibility of ramp metering and how it might function within a corridor. And so we want to keep that separate from what the comment here. We certainly do do multimodal corridor studies, and we could certainly look at those kinds of issues region-wide. And it doesn't need to be reflected here in the policy. And the third comment is that the funding conditions should acknowledge when ramp metering is not warranted. Again, if ramp metering is not warranted in a corridor, these funding conditions don't apply. So I think in that respect, while I appreciate the comments, I don't think there needs to be any changes to our TOS policy.
Thank you very much. That addresses my concerns. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Halstead, do you have something in addition on this?
Well, I just meant there was one other point there that I think that should have been included. That the third point was actually to clarify the process of adjudicating differences of opinion between Caltrans and the CMA or the local jurisdiction. What do we think we would do on that?
Sorry, did miss that. I had it highlighted. The ramp metering process really relies on a local process. So we have a technical committee comprised of all the partner agencies. So we have Caltrans, MTC, the CMA, and all the local agencies within that corridor. That really is the forum for discussion and decision-making. So if there are differences about any technical issue, metering rates as an example, or which ones should be, you know, which ramps should be metered, that's really the point of discussion. That's the forum where we have all the partner agencies at the table. There is a dialogue, and we would look for a consensus building concurrence of the strategy before we move forward with activation.
Thank you. I'd also like to say that I think that the San Francisco authorities are very much in favor of ramp metering where it can make the difference it makes, and support the idea as long as we don't do it in places where it's not going to work.
Thank you. Thank you, staff, for that. Commissioner Kinsey?
Yes, thanks. There's a couple things I want to just point out here. One, I appreciate the idea of integrating these principles, operating principles, into the final attachment that identifies how this policy is going to work. And it's always a pleasure when we can get out of a administrative MOU process with a fellow state agency, and the word acceleration is often not heard in transportation. So I think that that this is a really great effort on MTC's part. But what I specifically wanted to thank Ashley and MTC staff for is their willingness to grind through it with the CMAs, in particular our own CMA, where there were a lot of concerns about whether this would overrun the consensus building process. And it was made very clear that the local agencies, in concert with MTC and CMA and Caltrans, I mean, will work through until they actually have a plan that's workable for an operational section. So to Dan as well, I want to say thank you that Caltrans is willing to work with all of us to get it right before we get it started. Thank you.
Commissioner Spearing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I want to commend the staff. This is very aggressive, and when I was raising this issue, I guess a couple months ago, you really have hit the target here. You know, when you look at that ramp metering map, that, you know, that status that you had up there, it really shows what it's a system, and it needs to be managed as a system. It can't be these individual jurisdictions. The one thing I didn't quite understand is, where you have this withholding funds, where does that fit into this new practice chart where you have, you know, design, construction, metering plan, turn on? It looks like the decision to turn them on is made when you approve it in the design stages. I'm not quite sure how a local jurisdiction fits in that new practice chart on getting them turned on.
The metering plan, that arrow at the bottom is really where the locals engage, right? So that's when we go work with the local agencies and the CMAs to really go through an understanding of the technicalities of ramp metering, and then really going through a process to set the metering rates. So that's the, again, that's the forum of discussion, and that's the forum of consensus building and concurrence. And so I think the funding condition will come into play when we have the equipment installed in the ground, we have a ramp metering plan completed, and we're ready to activate. And at the point of activation where there is a disagreement, let's say an 11th-hour disagreement from a jurisdiction about rent metering, this is when the commission at its discretion can look at the issue and then can decide whether or not funding conditions would apply. I mean, it's just shy of us actually turning on the lights.
Yeah, I mean, I would just hope that, you know, we should have that consensus as we're going into the design. I mean, it seems kind of backwards that we're going to wait till we're ready to turn it on and we're going to say we need to have this consensus. And, you know, my concern is, you know, where I became aware of the problem is that, you know, one of my jurisdictions, one of the council members said, you know, that thing will be turned on over my dead body. And I'm saying, you know, you can't have a local jurisdiction, you know, holding up the turning on these lights. And with the MOUs with Caltrans, it certainly could create that situation. And so, you know, I just want to make sure that we're not repeating that same type of political pressure on the local jurisdictions. That really should be removed early in this process, that once that consensus, we go to design, that when those things are put in, they're ready to turn on. They're turned on. That we're not waiting for somebody to give us permission. And so I think it's important. You know, the way you've set this up, I think the input from the CMAs, you know, it's really more on the operational side is where their concerns are. And, you know, once we have that consensus, I think we've got the green light to turn them on. And so I just don't want them sitting there having a discussion whether they get turned on or not. So if that can...
Commissioner, we'd have no objection to moving that bottom purple arrow to the left, as you're suggesting, because yeah. I think you're right. And there's not a whole lot that's going to change between the time you decide to
exactly.
put them in and the time you decide to turn them on. And the problem we've had, as you see, is that there are a lot of blue lines on this map where they're put in and never turned on.
Yeah, and you know, all the local jurisdictions, their issues are being mitigated. I mean, that really is the bottom line. Are we mitigating the local jurisdiction's concerns? And we are doing that in this process. And so, Steve, I would agree. If we could change that flow, I think it would make a big difference. And then as they go in, the expectation is they're going to be turned on.
Well, and I do think that is one of the concerns as well. I mean, not only, you know, in the sort of extreme case in Route 4, where they were sitting out there so long that we now have to repair them before we turn them on. But it's also the case that, you know, once you install them, I think people are going to be a little more accepting of them, that you install them and you turn them on, instead of you install them and then 10 years later you ask them about turning them on.
Mr. Chairman, just, you know, Steve, if that's possible, that the metering plan is put before the construction phase, I think that makes just a lot more sense.
I agree.
As the chair, I would ask the question. It's very easy to shift an arrow in a PowerPoint presentation, but does there need to be any change made in the actual proposed written draft policy to make sure that the arrow can be moved properly? Staff?
No, we do not need to change the policy to move the arrow to the left.
So it would seem, if the rest of the committee is agreeable, Mr. Spearing's suggestion that we move the arrow appropriately according to the discussion that's been recorded, then that would resolve your concerns. Would that be correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. We're slowly moving around the dais here. Any questions from you, Commissioner Halstead?
I would just ask that staff continue to meet with the San Francisco CMA to make sure that their concerns are addressed.
We will do that.
And Commissioner, if I could point out, there's no color on the map in San Francisco. So I don't think there's any near-term threat. We're going to try to put in ramp meters there.
They're nervous. Come on.
Well, I don't know why. They keep tearing down freeways. So
they think you might
the threat is lessening year by year.
Okay, we've got lots of business to do. Let's move to Commissioner Haggerty.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Steve, I'm going to use this opportunity to kind of, as you know, I come from the saturated area of ramp metering, and to those who don't have it, I would say why. I mean, it really hasn't hurt the area in which we live. In fact, it's helped the freeways flow in a more cohesive manner. Where I do see the problem, and this is why I want to use this opportunity, and this really does apply to the hot lanes also, is in the enforcement. And I have to tell you, Steve, we have to get a handle on it, because it is really disheartening to be sitting over there waiting, you know, five, six cars back, seven cars back, waiting as a single occupancy vehicle and having some yo-yo driving by himself, getting the carpool lane, and pass right by everybody. And I'm going to tell you, I actually sat there once and 13 cars passed me in the carpool lane as a single occupancy vehicle. And I will also take it a step further and say that while I was waiting, there was a CHP officer in the bottom of the ramp, and two cars went past him, and he didn't do a darn thing. And my problem is I don't believe that CHP really believes that this is a high priority to them, and somehow we need to work with them to make it a priority, or I think we need to take it one step further and put cameras on the carpool lanes and take pictures and then have BATA go through and look at the pictures and say, yes, there's three in there or two or whatever, and move it to the side. And if they see an single occupancy vehicle in the carpool lane going through the ramp meter, and then we should give them a ticket. And it's got, because right now they're really not being taken seriously.
Commissioner, maybe if the chairman's willing, we could schedule a future item for this committee where we invite the CHP. And I'd like to broaden the issue because we also have quite a bit of concern about enforcement on the HOV lanes.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes. Our most successful HOV lane, in fact, on I-80, has the highest number of violations, which is usually not the case. So I think you ought to have a broader discussion, and I think you're absolutely right to point out that it's a real warning sign for hot lanes. Because if we can't make those work, you're not only screwing up traffic, you're losing a lot of money, too.
But that's why I said, you know, I wanted to kind of even broaden this discussion a little bit to the hot lanes because, you know, operating a hot lane through the Alameda County CMA, we see this, and we see total violations and no CHP enforcement out there, and it really turns the lane into a farce in a way. People just don't believe they're going to get a ticket, so they take their chance. And I would go so far as to think that BATA should have its own enforcement agency that and sorry, I know this is what you – I know you want to be the chief of police, but, you know, we have a lot of violation on a lot of our toll facilities, and I think it's something that we should at least even look at.
Well, Commissioner, I do think you're making some good headway today on the activation challenge. So now you're raising, I think, another one that's a pretty meaty subject, which is the enforcement challenge.
Yeah.
And I'd like to have a little time to work with the patrol and then bring them in, and we can talk about it.
Thank you, Commissioner Haggerty. I agree with your comments 100%, having watched what goes on in the 101 Sonoma County Diamond Lanes, and would be delighted if we would schedule at a future meeting of this committee a broad-ranging discussion. I have no intention of getting into the question of whether BATA should have an enforcement unit or not. I'll leave that to Bill Dodd and others above my pay grade. You do? Well,
I think we should look at
all right. Well, that's good. Let's move on here to Mayor Kwan, I believe.
Thank you. Actually, I have just a couple questions. Again, I'm a newer commissioner, so I haven't been following this, but I have basically two concerns, and maybe one intersects with Scott. I wanted to know whether or not local authorities have access to our cameras. And the reason I'm asking is that we have a FEMA grant where we're integrating cameras for safety and security, and we realize that there are a lot of cameras around our city, so we're actually trying to see if we can get more of the cameras fed into our emergency operations center for this issue, these issues of crime and security. And so I'm wondering whether or not there's anything that would keep us from getting a feed from you to be into our emergency operating center.
Good morning, Melanie Crotty. I'll try and answer that question for you. MTC has worked with Caltrans for a number of years on a regional video camera program. Right now, the focus has been really improving the feed to the Caltrans TMC. MTC actually also has a feed here. But as far as the totality of the cameras, it is kind of limited to the, you know, kind of the regional agencies. We do have camera feeds available through the 501 website, but that is a limited subset of all the cameras. But we certainly can look into your question in more detail to see what it would take to provide a richer feed to partner agencies and get back to you on that.
So let me just go a little bit more in detail why I'm interested in particular. When we look at our pattern of robberies and crimes in the city, a lot of them happen really close to freeway entrances and exits. In fact, some of them, the last groups of kids that we've gotten who were stealing laptops and purses on Rockridge were in Vallejo. But we have like six different freeway entrances in that neighborhood. It makes them a big target. And so it's an issue of regional crime and people using freeways for that. The second issue is, if you read, I think, the Mercury News headline today, is that car thefts are all up. So my question is, have we, and would we, is it legal, maybe also to add license plate readers to some of these entrances? So I was told a story by the CHP, I'm not sure if it's true, that they had asked to put license plate readers at the Bay Bridge, and that was turned down because they were thinking it's perfect. We could get them when they go into the toll authority. We could pick them up on the San Francisco side if they read stolen cars. And, again, Oakland chop shops are sometimes where your stolen cars end up. And so we were, in our own neighborhoods, we're piloting more license plate readers in neighborhoods that have high car thefts. And so I'm wondering whether or not we'd ever considered, or whether there's some law against us putting license plate readers at freeway entrances.
Anybody care to venture an answer to that question?
We're chatting over here. I do think, Commissioner, your question will run into our privacy policy, at least at the toll plazas, because we do get license plate information to deal with toll violators, but we have restrictions on how we can share it. Now, I believe there are certain exceptions when we get subpoenas from law enforcement, and so I'd like to follow up with you on that to make sure I don't give you the wrong answer. But the privacy policy is fairly restrictive, and the legislature is in the business in the last several years of making them even more restrictive.
So this is both bridges and freeways?
No, this is just the bridges. That's our particular interaction with it because we collect the tolls. On the freeways, Dan McElhaney is here, who's the deputy district director, and maybe he could help with an answer on, does the patrol ever try to get access to your freeway cameras?
Yeah, if you could just identify yourself for the record, please.
Yes, thank you, Chairman.
Although you've already been identified.
I'm Dan McElhaney, Chief Deputy District Director for Caltrans in the Bay Area. Of course, CHP and Caltrans and MTC at the TMC, the Traffic Management Center here at our Oakland office, that's where our closed-circuit TV cameras are available, and some of those are online. So CHP and Caltrans, we can consult together with MTC staff. A lot of our cameras don't cover the ramps, so we'll have to look into what type of future program, if that's part of the discussion. And CHP often doesn't use the cameras for enforcement, but if and a lot of the cameras don't have any recordings, but some of that can be in part of the discussion as well, particularly in hot spots like that are being discussed.
But there's no prohibition?
It may be the other way around, whether or not they have the authority to utilize the cameras in regards to certain types of enforcement.
I would recognize that the question of enforcement having been brought up earlier this morning, that it looks, Mr. Executive Director, like we're headed towards a workshop on enforcement issues that come under the purview both of MTC and BATA.
Yeah, and I think it's also the case, and Dan can correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of the highway cameras we have do not have sufficient resolution to pick up a license plate. I mean, the ones we have at the toll plaza, they're pretty good in that way, and we're
that's
upgrading
true.
Some of them to make them better. But they were designed for a particular purpose, and that's to look at cars, not to look at license plates.
And I think if we did have such an enforcement workshop, we could bring clarity to
sure.
a lot of this discussion, and it certainly falls under the purview of the Operations Committee, I would believe.
Sure.
So thank you, Mayor Kwan. Any other questions?
So I got just follow, last question point. Is, so if we could just follow up on license plate readers, because quite frankly, you don't need a good camera resolution if you got a license plate reader, which might resolve Scott's issue.
Okay. Thank you very much. Commissioner Bates.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is rather mundane after all these other questions, but I'm concerned about the design question of the on the chart, and I'm particularly interested, and I like, you know, I don't want to take a lot of the committee's time, but I'm particularly interested in, you know, in difficult on-ramp situations. Particularly, I'm concerned about, and I would like to have some conversations around the Gilman situation. Well, I mean, it's really, I don't know how you're going to be able to do lamp metering. It's going to be a huge mess. So I'd like to, I see we have people here from ACTC. Staff, maybe we can have a combined conversation about that.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Campos, before we entertain a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to note that I think that the issue that Mayor Kwan raised is a very important one. And while I certainly think that we need to figure out how we can help increase public safety, I do think that before action is taken, that that requires a larger discussion, a policy discussion by this body, because there are civil liberties implications that should be considered as well. And so I just wanted to note that. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I have no speaker cards in front of me. Therefore,
I'll move the staff recommendation.
Okay, there's a motion. Is there a second?
I made the motion.
Oh, okay. All right, we have a motion on the floor. All those in favor of forwarding the resolution to the commission for approval, say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed, Mayor Bates? No. Okay, no one is opposed. This resolution passes and will move to the full commission. I'd just like to thank the Melanie Crotty and Ashley Nguyen and the staff. There's been a lot of work going on over the last number of days responding to questions, not just from CM Cisco and Marin, but from other CMAs. And so I really appreciated that hard work, and thank you for the presentation. This brings us on to something which is actually has been referred to more than once in our discussion here, and that is the Regional Transportation Management System. As this committee knows, we were asked to work starting last October on a review of the Regional Transportation Management System. And so we have us the aforementioned Melanie Crotty and the aforementioned Mr. Dan, who are going to give us an update on how things are going in this review, and also to take a look at possible principles for the management and operations of the transportation management system. Thank you very much, and look forward to your presentation.
Thank you. Good morning, Commissioners. This is Melanie Crotty. I will start off the presentation, and Dan will be picking up at kind of a midpoint. So I think Commissioner McKenzie did a great job of introducing the item, so I'll just kind of move quickly into the first slide that gives an overview of the status of where we are. So I think we last met with you and gave a report in January. And just as a reminder, especially for some of the newer commissioners, that this project was kicked off last summer. It's the genesis of it was really concerns based on a series of TV reports about the condition of the field equipment, the managed equipment out on the freeways, that they weren't working well enough, that they were performing below standard. And this committee asked that MTCU staff work with Caltrans to look into it and come back with some recommendations about how to improve the overall program and the services that they are intended to provide. So what we've been doing since January is really kind of continuing to focus on the ramp up of repairing of the field equipment. And we'll be reporting more on that. And I think the other two key elements is one is that we have started looking into a more strategic look at how we want to manage the equipment going forward in the future, and looking at the cost and the resources that might be needed to repair to manage the equipment in the future. I'm looking at some governance principles. And then lastly, as you already heard this morning, we brought forward a recommendation for a new policy for TOS that you all just approved, or actually, sorry, referred to move to the full commission. So again, as a little bit of background, what are we talking about when we talk about the transportation management system? We are defining as having three major components: the field equipment, which was the genesis of the concerns, but as well in the Transportation Management Center, there's incident management and freeway management. As you can see from the slide, there's a couple of points it's trying to make with that. That first of all, already today, this TMS is being jointly managed. The blue is showing the field, the functional elements that Caltrans is largely responsible for. The light red is what MTC is responsible for. And then the purple shows those areas where MTC, Caltrans, and CHP are today already jointly managing the function or the service. Another point this slide wants to make is that as much as we are concerned about our present troubles today, we are concerned about the future, that as we are continuing to invest into the program and continuing to deploy elements of the management system, we know that we need to do a better job. Things that are coming up, adaptive ramp metering, express lanes, those kind of programs are going to require system that works and that we have resources to actively manage how those systems are performing. So then moving on to a brief update of what our efforts are today. I would say that there's kind of two major themes that we're working on. There's the governance, the policy side, and then there's the actual technology side. And the technology side is requiring us to really roll up our sleeves. We've formed a variety of working groups with Caltrans and CHP. The three major ones are, first of all, there's a communication strategic master plan where we are looking at basically how we are talking to the field elements. And this is something that seems rather esoteric, but I think as far as a cost driver, it's extremely important that we only have a limited amount of fiber that is outlaid on the freeway system. BART has some that we're using, but that really is a big cost driver. We are very hopeful and optimistic that we can come up with a good outcome this, where we're looking for a joint agreement with not just MTC and Caltrans, but many other transportation players in the Bay Area. In particular, we've worked with Santa Clara. VTA is very interested in this. So I think this is an exciting opportunity for us to really kind of, at one point, come back with a cost-effective partnership for delivering a vastly improved communications network in the region. And by starting off of that, we'll be looking at a fiber master plan. And that's really being, I should say, accelerated or led by the express lanes, knowing that we're moving forward with certain corridors for that. And then lastly, the detection strategic plan. In the past, when we've had these presentations, we've had discussions about the freeway detection. We know that we have a problem with detection, but what we're trying to sort through is really, is there a hierarchy of priority and importance in detection? Are there certain types of detection we need for certain types of transportation management needs? For example, we know that the type of detection that you need for travel information is vastly different and actually much easier to do for travel information than it is for corridor planning needs. So we're sorting through that and hoping to come up with a way to better recommend how we deploy the systems, manage it, and really what is deployed where. And then the last background slide. At our last presentation, there were some questions, I think, justifiably. Well, we need to kind of have a step back. Why are we doing this? Why is transportation management important? And so we've had a little mini research effort to look into what the value and benefits of TMS investments are. And it's got a wide range, and it's certainly validated what we've been saying more anecdotally, but there's benefits that can be achieved not only for mobility and travel time reliability, but also for corridor operations, freight mobility, improved safety. And so as you can see from this slide, that there are a range of benefits really depending upon the study that we derive the information from. We did kind of come up as far as a global conclusion that at a region level, system-wide level, that by fully deploying these traffic management tools that we can reduce congestion by at least 5% in the region. So I think I'm going to turn it over to Dan for the next couple slides.
Thank you, Melanie. Again, Dan McElhenney. I'm Chief Deputy District Director for Caltrans in the Bay Area. Since our last report, here's what the status of our field equipment and the trends for our repairs. But let me take a moment and first thank the MTC staff, particularly Steve and Andy and Melanie and the whole team for the partnership here since September in developing a strategy as we were assessing the need, really getting the inventory together, reorganizing to focus our energies and priorities as a program together instead of individual corridor, individual elements. And remember, these elements include the changeable message signs, which is in the upper left, ramp meters, detection stations, and closed-circuit TV cameras. These are the main items that provide support to the Traffic Management Center. For the changeable message signs, you can see there's progress, but there's also new issues. So on each of these graphs,
The top curve is the progress of the number of elements that have been repaired since January, but also the bottom line part of the bottom curve is more the status of other new failures since then on other parts of the system. So it's important as we move ahead as a program that we're aware of what the history and the data is. Once we get a large portion of a corridor, there may be other copper wire thefts, there may be other failures in the system based on age of the equipment. And so we're really gathering important data as we plan ahead for future investments so we can get a sense after this 3 months of data where we may be headed through the rest of the year and in years ahead. So that's very important. That's why that's shown that way. Also, I want to emphasize the priority at Caltrans for the department and the teamwork that we have with MTC, and recently we've been updating the California Transportation Commission staff as we look ahead at overall program. And with me today is, my project manager for Caltrans District 4, Mike Condi. Raise your hand. Mike's been essential, and I wanted to recognize him for keeping us focused on the partnership and delivery. On the next slide, the field equipment operational status. There has been good progress in bringing on a higher percentage towards our performance goals for each of these elements. Top line being ramp meters, then CMS, then traffic detection stations, then the closed circuit TV cameras. If you remember, after we finished the updating the inventory and assessing the needs through the end of last year and early this year, Director Malcolm Dougherty for Caltrans approved a $21 million emergency director's order package that provided us the opportunity to bring on six contractors to support the effort in bringing us back into acceptable performance levels for these elements. And so out of that $21 million, just under $5 million has been invested. The last couple of months have been very busy by these six different contractors across the nine counties. And in teamwork with our maintenance staff as well as our construction staff, and that's been an important success. And we expect that trend to do very well through the summer months and into the fall and to be able to utilize those funds that were provided. At the same time, remember on the previous chart that we have a lot of system issues that we're learning about, and so we're keeping ahead of that, but it appears the investment's going to have to be continuous throughout as we operate the system. I mentioned copper wire theft is one of the elements that the overall system is having issues with, software repairs. There's other equipment failure rates, as I mentioned, that we're putting together. We have, just to paint the size of the program, remember for our changeable message signs, we have 140 of those. The ramp meters, there's 360 ramp meter stations. There's over 2,300 traffic detection stations, and there's over 390 closed-circuit TV cameras. And so that we've got close tabs on all of that, and it's important for us to identify the reasons for failure and to be able to define our resource management plan and our maintenance plan moving ahead that really gives any decisions on future investments, you know, strong background for the committee and commission and the state as we move ahead.
So the last couple slides is moving away from the technical aspects of the project and moving to talk about governance. As you may recall, when we discussed this in the past, Steve Heminger had said that as we are looking to Plan Bay Area is promising that there will be additional funds made available for the freeway management system, but that as a condition of that, that MTC needed to have a seat at a table, that we needed to be a managing investor rather than a passive investor. And so that we have been discussing with Caltrans a concept of a more joint governance. And what we have proposed, what we have here today to discuss with you are some governance principles that would define that joint governance. The, you know, many of them are kind of more motherhood and apple pie, but I do want to focus on a couple that I think will be of interest and of value. And I think first and foremost is the intent, and I think the a strong agreement from Caltrans that we need to focus on it be a performance-based governance, that whatever, however we structure it, it really needs to be focused on defined targets that are really then we are then striving to achieve those to optimize operations. So that should go through the decision-making and also how we actually spend the resources for the program. Of course, we want to define a governance solution that would ensure accountability and transparency to the taxpayers. And I think that, you know, just including the point that Steve made about that we need to secure a management stake, that with a significant amount of regional funds going into this, we need to make sure that we have a place at the table. Another important resource principle, I think, is that as the region looks to provide this contribution, that we really need to come up with a way to leverage the state's contribution. They are contributing a certain amount today. We are working through what that is. It's a little harder than we thought to come up with that amount. We want to make sure that as we move forward, that we just because we're putting more in, we don't see less from the state. And obviously, we like to see them commit more as matched to what we're doing. So this is the principles that we are we propose to Caltrans. I think that it's been received extremely favorably by the executive staff at Caltrans, and we'll be moving forward with some actual principles for a master agreement based on this. This slide just kind of illustrates, I think, the important point about performance targets and having a performance-based governance. And it really ties together some of the thinking that we're doing on the technical aspects of the strategic plan, that we know that that as much as we're bringing more funds to the table, that there's a strong likelihood that we're always going to be kind of managing kind of in a triage or at least on a more of a cost-effectiveness basis. And so it's likely that as we examine the assets that we have in the field, that we want to come up with kind of a tiering of priorities for our performance measures, that there's going to be certain elements that are extremely essential to the performance of the regional system, and there may be second tiers that we that's a way of kind of giving a little relief on the resource front. So this is just an example. Obviously, we need to really work through this very carefully with Caltrans, and I'm sure that we'll have a number of additional performance targets. So this is the last slide. This just really kind of provides in one place all the different work we're doing. And it's, you know, I think there's three major tranches that we're showing here. There's the repair of the existing equipment we have today. That's what you heard about from Dan, about the director's orders and what we're doing to fix what we have, and then how we can incorporate what they've learned from that as we look into our forward thinking. That'll help inform the resource evaluation for a future cost assessment. And we hope to then weave that into, here are the resources we have available, here's what we think the costs are, how do those two match together. And then lastly, there's the governance approach that I just finished discussing, that we are sorting through the concepts and the principles, and we'll be coming back at some point in the future with some principles for a master agreement. With that, I think that concludes staff's presentation. We'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Let me ask commissioners, do you have any questions? Commissioner Tisi?
I'm just sort of curious, when you look at the reason for failures, I mean, that part with the cable theft and vandalism, I mean, that's huge. That's the largest component. Are they stealing the copper out of the equipment itself, or is it in a yard where you have all the resources for the equipment?
This is at the pool boxes on site. We haven't had too many in yard locations, though that does happen on occasion. So this is focused on data coming back from the contractors and our maintenance crews from the site, so we'll be collecting this more throughout the summer. And it's roughly a third to a half of the issues each month and we've working closely with CHP as well to see what we can do and teamwork with MTC to be sure that any vehicles alongside the roadway, whether marked or unmarked, are really vehicles that are supposed to be there. But the expertise of these wire thefts are quite amazing, because it seems like they can get in and get out very quickly and be able to pull long runs of wire between ramps and at interchanges, and so it's a tough problem. That's a nationwide issue, but particularly here in the Bay Area.
And have you caught any, I mean, have you actually caught anybody? Or CHP? Or?
CHP has a case pending, but it's not on a state highway, if I recall.
Okay.
So it's very rare at this point.
Any other questions from commissioners? Seeing none, I'd just, first of all, like to thank the staff for all the work that's gone into this report. There's been considerable progress made since we started these discussions, and it's progress not only as has been reported on getting things fixed, but also in looking at the way in which a possible governance of this structure could occur. And as was just stated, we will anticipate coming back to this committee later on this year, and hopefully we can come to some resolution of the governance matter, and certainly to continue our progress. But I think the main thing is the work that's been done between ourselves and MTC and Caltrans District 4 in particular, and hopefully also Caltrans headquarters will see the great benefits of this approach. So thank you very much for that. I know that we have another committee meeting following mine, and so I would ask that in the following two information items, if we could have a brevity could be the watchword for the discussion of agenda item number 4, which is an informational item on MTC SAFE, the draft 13-14 operating and capital budget, which will be coming back formally to us later on this summer. Eva Sun is going to give the presentation.
Yes, thank you, commissioners. I will be brief on this item. Okay, this is a draft operating and capital budget for SAFE for the 2014 year. And again, it's an information item, and we will bring you the final budget and resolution to this committee for approval next month. The SAFE operating budget consists of the call box program and also the freeway service patrol program. And the draft budget currently shows a surplus of about $700,000, due mainly to a larger STP grant of about $600,000, which will cover expenses in the Freeway Service Patrol program in lieu of using SAFE revenue. SAFE's primary revenue source is from the DMV, and every year approximately $6 million come from this revenue source. And the other revenue sources for SAFE come from state and federal grants. One difference between this draft budget and this current year's budget is we moved two capital projects from SAFE to MTC in the 14 year to consolidate them under the MTC programs. And the two programs that are being moved are the Freeway Performance Initiative program and also the Incident Management program. And the associated CMAC programs were also moved to MTC. So the expenses for the FY14 budget are a little bit lower because related to the two programs that were moved to MTC. So, again, this draft is for information, so I'll end the presentation right here. Any questions?
Thank you very much. I do not see any commissioners with any questions. We'll look forward to taking more formal action later on this summer, and thank you for that report very much. Okay, that would bring us to the last agenda item, Clipper customer service, information about customer service and satisfaction, and Lynn Valdivia is going to be giving this brief report, and she knows that that's the code word for brevity.
I like that. So I am here to give you a quick update on Clipper customer service. Some of you received comments from Clipper users, and questions come up occasionally at these meetings, so I wanted to take this opportunity to keep you up to speed on how things are going with our program. So the memo you have in your packet has a lot of detail on program growth, customer satisfaction trends, highlights from the recent customer surveys, some enhancements that we've recently put into place and that we plan on doing in the next few months, as well as additional information about the contractor's training and monitoring program. So I'm just going to touch on those items just very quickly. In terms of program growth, ridership continues to grow as calls to the call center and visits to our website are trending down, which is indicating a reduced need for customer assistance from our riders. Second, customer satisfaction remains high, with more customers reporting higher levels of satisfaction with Clipper. We did a survey of registered cardholders back in December, and the results show that our users continue to be satisfied, with 88% reporting being satisfied with the program, and 62% reporting being very satisfied. Most customer contacts are through our website, so in recognition of this, we recently released updates to our website to streamline various account functions and the card and value ordering processes. And in June, we'll also be releasing a website optimized for mobile devices to improve the experience for customers who access our website through their phones and their tablets. Fourth, we've added more self-service functions to the automated phone service, which has resulted in an increase in the number of calls to our call center that are handled solely by the auto phone service, where no interaction with an actual customer service representative is required. The Clipper contractor has a robust training and monitoring program in place for their customer service representatives. I just wanted to give a little information on that. When new representatives come in, they go through extensive initial training programs that take place over the course of several weeks. They have to pass multiple tests before they can take calls, and they receive continuing training and testing. Additionally, managers monitor and evaluate calls for each representative in the call center every month. They review random calls for each representative. They rate them on various standards, which are included in your packet. And they provide any feedback and additional training to any customer service representative who may need improvement in any particular area. In terms of our contractors' performance, as measured against the contract's key performance indicators, and these KPIs include things such as call answering speed, website and phone system availability, and card order fulfillment, our contractor performs consistently well. They have met or exceeded all KPIs for the past 17 months, unfortunately until last month, where they missed one KPI, and that was related to an erroneous email that the contractor sent out to 12,000 customers telling them that an auto load transaction had failed. These customers had received a follow-up email within a couple of hours telling them to disregard the first email, but that error, that erroneous email had resulted in double the volume of calls to the call center that particular day, which caused them to meet the KPI for the month of April. In the coming months, we plan to conduct a comprehensive analysis of our in-person customer service centers. As you may recall, we have three of them, two in San Francisco and one in Oakland. We will be looking at the performance of these locations and develop a long-term vision to help us determine a long-term vision for how these operations will fit into our overall strategy for customer service for the program. We plan to come back on a regular basis to keep you updated on customer service, and I'm happy to answer any questions that anyone might have.
Okay, thank you for that report. Any questions at this time? And I do have one speaker card in this item. I'll entertain Mr. Spearing's question first, and I'll get to you right away, Rich.
If I want to get four cards for my family, mm-hmm. can I call and get four cards and put it on one credit card?
Yes, you can.
So I could just call and say, send me four cards. I want to load that on this card. And then, and how do they load the card? Is it four times what I would have for one card, or?
Sorry, I'm not sure I understand.
Well, you have a preload of what, $30? I don't remember what it was.
Well, you can put whatever you want on the card. If you call or go through our website to order a card or four cards, you can put what you want on it. You know, you can put e-cash on one card and a pass on another card, whatever it is you want.
Okay, so it has that flexibility.
Yes.
Very good.
Thank you very much. Rich Hedges has a statement he'd like to make.
Yes, I just want to tell you that I can't speak highly enough about the Clipper people and the service I've gotten from them, and I think it's always good when you hear good news. I had a problem with my card loading, nothing to do with the company, but more the sort of fiefdom situation we have with all the different agencies and their rules, and it didn't load with Caltrain, and it just wouldn't recognize that I had money. And I spoke with Tangeria, Patricia, and Donald. They worked their behinds off to fix it with IT, and Donald followed up with calls at home three times.
There's nothing that beats an unsolicited testimonial, and we'll be coming back at you for a possible video opportunity. And the other thing is, I want you to note that our staff is our truth tellers, and I like these sort of reports in the operations section. So, Lynn, thank you very much for that. That concludes the business of this committee. We will be reassembling on Friday, June 14th, and it's with great pleasure I hand the gavel over to my colleague on my right.